You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Nancy McDonald Reuter. Nancy's 25-year career began at Leo Burnett Company, where she worked in account management and strategy for Procter & Gamble, Eli Lilly, The Gap, Lexmark Companies, and Herxt Marion Rousseau. In 2002, Nancy founded Noetic Consultants with the goal of becoming an effective extension of her clients' teams. The word noetic is related to one's intellect and thinking. Nancy chose the name for the company because it reflected her team's commitment to helping clients strategically think through their challenges so that together they can take the actions necessary to get to the best possible outcomes. Noetic's clients have included Samsung, PepsiCo, Nike, Marriott, Mayo Clinic, and Discovery, Inc. She is also the author of Jack and Jill Went Up the Hill, How Senior Marketers Scale the Heights Through Art and Science, and the creator of the Noetic Art and Science Assessment. Nancy, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, you know, your bio stole all of the my whole first line of questioning.
So we're done now then?
I need a brand that makes you smile. No. But you have such an interesting company name, Noetic. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes. Cool. Rhymes with poetic.
Poetic. Noetic. Yeah, I'm sure Spellcheck loves you, or you love Spellcheck by thinking maybe you've taught it by now, or you've
yes,
had it learn
my,
this
my
word.
My computer and my phone finally accept it, but they were auto-correcting me for many years.
I can imagine. But anyone seeing that name would have to wonder where it came from. And you not only explain what the word means, but also why you chose it. So the question that precedes that, because we've talked about naming before, but I think it's also interesting because we've talked about naming on the show before. We've talked about the words in our industry, slogans, taglines, brand promises, all these different things aren't always easy to remember. We don't always have the physician heal thyself problem.
Right.
What is the challenge, it seems, in naming companies that do what we do?
So what I thought was the challenge back 17 years or so ago when I founded Noetic is that so many of the names that I saw out there for companies that did similar or crossed over in some way is that they were extremely forgettable. And it seemed really odd to me that being in the business of trying to help brands really have distinction, that we wouldn't have a name that would feel distinct. So that was really my goal with our name. There's a lot of companies, and I am not naming any specific company when I say this, but have a lot of names like Marketing Solutions, you know, just generic, vanilla. And so I think, especially these days, as just in the world, we have more and more brands out there, and it's noisy. You really need a name that can stand out and feel different, and ideally have a story behind it.
Well, and yours has such a neat story too. It does seem like we should practice what we preach more than sometimes we do. And I like not naming names, but we. I think, you know, we're in the branding business and we help people tell their story. So why don't we do a better job sometimes of telling stories about us, about what we do as well?
Yeah. And I will say part of the story of coming up with Noetic, and this, I don't know if this is something that one should promote, but I'll tell you anyway. I did go literally to the Webster Dictionary, like a physical dictionary, and I started out at the letter N in search of a single word that could somehow encapsulate. And I went to the letter N because my name, Nancy, starts with N. Like that was the thinking behind it, not very strategic. But when I found that word, it jumped off the page to me because it did encapsulate what I feel like we do when we really are at our best. We're really helping our clients think more insightfully and gain wisdom and perspective that they don't have, which is what being noetic is really about.
Well, I love that. So the other thing that is the bio fodder that I'm a big fan of is the book that you're the author of. I have to know, and probably some of the more strategic naming from you, but I have to know about a book that is about senior marketers scaling heights through art and science that is called Jack and Jill Went Up the Hill.
Yeah, what's that all about? Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack there, but structurally, I'll tell you about the Jack and Jill and the scaling. But structurally, the book was based on a body of research that I did with over 50 senior marketers that I did in-depth interviews with, and the book unpacks their wisdom through lots and lots of quotes, and they sort of unpack it all with me, and you hear from them literally. Calling them Jack and Jill was really born out of two things. I didn't really necessarily need a way to make people anonymous. Most people chose to use their actual names and titles. A couple people, for corporate policy reasons, you know, did just go by Jack or Jill, and we, you know, protected who they were. But the two key things were that, you know, Jack and Jill in the old nursery rhyme, you know, they go up the hill and they tumble down, right? And one of the big themes that came out of the research that I did was how resilient these marketers are. And in an increasingly complex marketing landscape, it's really important to be able to be resilient. If you're going to be innovating and trying things, you are going to stumble and fall. But they don't see that as failure. They see that as learning. So the idea of Jack and Jill scaling the heights, you know, is that they are going to take a tumble, but they're going to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and get right back climbing up again. And that really is the big key, one of the big keys to their success. So that was one reason that I called them Jack and Jill. The other reason was that that adage, Jack of all trades, and of course that's always followed by master of none, uh-huh. Right? Which is a bit of a criticism. And I really believe, out of the research that I did and the premise of the book, that that really needs to be turned on its ear, because when it comes to being in a senior role in marketing, it's actually important to be a generalist. And these are people who have gone out of their way to specialize in being a generalist. And by availing themselves of both what I call science skills and art skills, they're creating that nimbleness across that spectrum of skills that one needs really to be able to excel in the environment today. So that's where that very long name for the book came from.
Well, it sounds fascinating. And of all the different things that you said in there, I think that what strikes me is that notion of being a generalist, because I feel like, especially in the through the lens that you're looking at of learning a lesson learning lessons from senior marketers, it seems like conventional wisdom, the conventional Jack and Jill lesson, is the or what we seem to hear a lot is the Jack of all trades, master of none, become the mm-hmm. specialist person of all the special people to ever special things. I know I personally, you know, that I have a marketing business myself, and I struggle with this. I always joke that everyone smart says that I, you know, should be specializing things more, but I just enjoy the diversity of working on lots of different things, lots of different ways. And that's something that I like and doesn't always feel, I don't always feel incredibly smart for pursuing the path of a generalist.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I have heard a lot of senior folks in marketing talk about that push and pull, that tension. And certainly in no way do I think that there isn't an important place for specialization. Right. There certainly is. As you get up into those senior levels, though, there's just a bunch of dynamics happening today that really necessitate having that broader skill set. First of all, you don't know what the next opportunity is that's going to get thrown your way, whether that's a move up or a move over. It usually involves some kind of skill that you don't yet have, because marketing has become so ever varied and vast that no one could possibly have that all. There was one senior marketer that I spoke to who said it so well, that every job that he's gotten, he has not yet felt prepared for. And that in fact, if he did feel fully prepared, then it wouldn't be the right challenge for him if he knew how to do it all. So there is a need to be able to know how to be a learner. But part of that is knowing how to tap into the specialization. So, you know, we talk about various things in the book about how you can go about balancing that. And one of the key ways, for example, is who you assemble on your team. So let's say you aren't someone who's steeped deeply in data analytics. Well, you better make sure that you have people who have that skill set that you can tap into. You need to understand it. You don't necessarily need to be the one who's, you know, sitting there running the data at a senior level, but you really need to avail yourselves of those specialists, but you also need to be able to look at that big picture. So I really encourage people to let go of the angst around the master of none. And, you know, the way I would coin it instead is to be a jack of all trades, or to have all tradesness is really what it takes to be a master in marketing these days.
Yeah.
So you can feel better about yourself with that too. Right?
We're recording this on a Monday, which is not always the brightest of all days in one's headspace. So I'm gonna go ahead and just take that as a compliment and
Excellent. Enjoy
my generalist ways.
Do you struggle to keep up with everything that's new with marketing today? Don't get frustrated. Get scrappy. I'd love to bring my Get Scrappy keynote to your next conference or corporate event. With a foot in the classroom and a foot in the field working with clients, I know what works and why, and I can't wait to share it with you during a talk that mixes strategic insights with tactical, practical tips. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So in thinking about all of this, I think that It's such a key point that you mentioned about who's on the team and who you've assembled around you and knowing what those skills are. It does seem like the who marketers are have changed, but also you talk a lot about the art and science, and certainly the art and science assessment that you're the creator of. Is it different, or is that kind of where we came from, and then with all of this digital, we got very technical and analytical over the past couple of decades, and now we're maybe, not that these changes are slowing down, but certainly that they've kind of overtaken what we do. Are we getting back to finding that balance of art and science?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, or said another way, everything changes, but then everything stays the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with digital, obviously, things have become a far less physical experience, right? Which is like a super obvious thing to say. but the ramifications of that are far reaching. But there's so many things about the brand experience that, while they're different because now we're in a conversation with our customers, it's such a give and take where it used to be just sort of a one-way street. The measurability is immensely better than it ever was before, the precision around the ability to reach audiences. And yet the same premise and the same strategic underpinnings that were true from the beginning of Timer are still true today. You need to be extremely thoughtful and strategic about who you serve and really clear about what you're offering and making sure that you're meeting some sort of or solving some sort of problem or leveraging some sort of opportunity for that audience. And that's as true as it's ever been. And digital really hasn't changed this. I think the only way that it really sometimes seems different is that with the accessibility of channels, a lot of people tend to dive right in to channel-specific thinking and oftentimes find it even more difficult than it used to be when we had less channels to back up and really think first about their audience and what they're offering that's going to be most relevant authentically to that audience.
Well, you talk about channel-specific thinking, and it does make me think of the evolution that we've been under and kind of how digital cropped up and has kind of been not always managed in the most integrated way. And I think that gets us in our teams, both agency side, both client side, a little more channel focused than is sometimes best, but somehow finding a way to take a step back out and look at the big picture and see what makes the most sense.
It's so true. And one of the things that's so hard about that oftentimes is just what is the corporate structure? Because if you don't have any group that is caring across the channels for the full customer experience, and some companies don't, it's really hard to get that together, right? And look at that full journey. If you're, you know, sitting really steeped over here in events or over here in digital or whatever is your channel specific. So we run into that challenge a lot of times. And oftentimes, you know, we're coming in at that CMO or senior marketer level where they're saying, I need help doing that because all the people that I have are steeped within the channel world. And I need, you know, a thought partner who can help me pull it back up out of the weeds and look at the full picture and think about how we should be integrating. Because that's where our customers are, right? Our customers aren't saying, I think I'm going to go see what this brand is doing for me in Facebook. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that's like the sad story of marketing integration is the customer point of view that just kind of blows all of that out of the water, that they're not looking for. Yeah, I wonder what this business is doing in this one specific place, as opposed to I have a relationship with them now. I need that to feel coherent everywhere.
Yeah, I say to clients all the time, you know, you are so well steeped and knowledgeable about your products and your services. Your customers are not waiting for your next innovation, for your next piece of news. Like, they're just not. If you catch them in their busy lives in a way that's relevant to them, they'll pay attention. Otherwise, even if they are loyal to you, they're not waiting around for it. And you know, we know in our heart of hearts that's true because we are all consumers out there as well, right? Living our busy lives. And even though, you know, we might be marketers and lovers of brands, I'm doing the same thing. I'm tuning it out when it's not relevant to me. We all are.
Yeah. So speaking of point of view, one thing that is interesting to me, I always love when we have a guest on who also spends some time in the classroom as well. You're an adjunct professor at Georgetown, also your alma mater, teaching marketing strategy. And these, speaking of who's on the team, you are teaching potentially who's on our listeners' teams of tomorrow. What are you noticing about those that you interact with versus how you spend your time in the field?
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a hybrid, really, because in addition to classroom work, we also do a tremendous amount of training for corporations, for their marketing departments. We're also certified faculty for the A&A. So we go into many different companies and train out on strategic marketing. So we see a really broad sample, I would say, of marketers and what they're challenged with. I probably could write another book on that topic, but I would say the biggest things that we see are the difficulty with starting with the customer in mind. What oftentimes, you know, the buzz phrase these days is customer centric. But it really is true that it's difficult as a marketer to start with that. So oftentimes the minute that we are on the quote unquote client side, we are really focused on what we want to sell. And there's just this huge temptation to just steepen that first and, you know, push it out in what we would call a product push, as opposed to stepping back and saying, who are we really for and what are those people about? So leading with the who is something that people oftentimes, you know, just want to jump right past. And then I would say the second biggest thing is what we were just talking about a moment ago about channel specific thinking. You know, oftentimes in a classroom setting, people want to jump to channel to get specifically savvy about, you know, okay, when I'm doing social media, you know, do I need to be thinking about this or that? And it's like, well, let's back up first and understand what role does that play in the journey of your customer, as opposed to thinking in a channel by channel way.
Boy, the leading with the who is something that it's one of those that when you said that, I'm sitting here, I'm nodding along. It seems like I think that's everywhere, because I see that in both students. I'm a teacher also here at the University of Iowa, but the difficulty in actually doing something with that is there a process? Is there something that can make this? I mean, I know, you know, there's the Jeff Bezos chair story. But I think other brands like Sears have done that. Is there any other way to keep the customer top of mind in our marketing so that we don't miss something that is so easy to miss and pretty important not to miss?
Yeah, there's a couple different things. One of the it's just such a simple framework, but we use it all the time, and many big blue chip brands also use it, is the who, what, how framework. And it really does come down to really distilling it down to answering just the questions of who do we serve? What do they want or need? What are we offering them that will meet that want or need? And how will we bring that what to our who? And getting that distilled down can be, you know, months and months of work to get there. But then getting people inside the organization to really understand that that's what it's all about as the focal point. And it always starts with the who, because the framework drives you there. We've seen that be very powerful for organizations. I would say the other thing from a tool perspective, because we're pretty big on tools and frameworks, because it really helps marketers. It just helps them get on track and stay on track with focus. And it also seems to be a way to get people to align across different parts of the organization if they can kind of go off the same story, is what we call customer journey mapping. How, you know, goes by some different names, but we will help organizations map out in a visual way, how do your customers come to know you, and then take that step by step all the way through to their becoming loyal followers and kind of looping back around. And there's something powerful in helping people be able to see it that way, in sort of a pictorial way, that can come to unlock it, because there's so much going on at the programmatic level, at the executional level. We often say, you know, you need to do your get ready and your get set before you just go. But there's a lot of marketing out there that's just go, right? There's just not a strong strategy behind it. They go straight to the execution. So that can help.
I love that. And that's a great framework and is a good way of getting everyone on the same page. Nancy, as we start to wrap up, I have to ask, and you know, it, in spite of your bio being so info-loaded, I didn't have to get to it right away, but that is for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Brand that's made me smile. You know, they're a newer brand, though not brand new, but I would still call them an emerging brand, is Casper. They're a mattress company. You familiar with them?
Yeah.
They have just done a beautiful job of creating a brand with such an interesting and make you smile voice. And they really do a nice job of carrying it through all their channels. Their whole thing is that they are for people who are really looking for an incredibly comfortable mattress. And their answer to that is, it's not too soft and it's not too firm. So it's sort of this Goldilocks. But they also talk a lot about what I would call our love affair with sleep. And so much of, you know, when you think about what you really want to do when you lay down on that mattress at night, well, there's a couple things you want to do, but primarily you're looking to get a really good night's sleep, right? And that's elusive for so many people. And they just do a really beautiful job of keeping that focus on the customer, what that customer wants. And then they have this really warm and witty voice that comes through. And I just find, you know, I have them in my feed, and I do have a couple of Caspers in my house, and I just have such a great feeling about them. It literally is a make you smile kind of brand.
Well, that is awesome. Love Casper. So where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I am on your typical social media site. So I'd love for people to link with me, Facebook with me, Twitter with me. I would, I'm on Instagram too, but mostly my Instagram's more on the personal side. A great way to learn more about Noetic or senior marketers and how they're excelling would be through my book, which is on Amazon. It's both in ebook and regular physical book. And even email, if people want to email me, I'm at nancy@noeticconsultants, all one word, .com. I would love to hear from your listeners.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Nancy, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Nick, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the time, and hopefully it made your Monday and my Monday a little brighter.
Awesome. And a reminder that you can subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes and Apple, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review. Help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.